Chapter 1. Join Us. On the move, down was always the direction of Datum Earth. Down to the bustling worlds, down to the millions of people. Up was the direction of the silent worlds and the clean air of the high megas. 5 steps west of Datum Madison, Wisconsin, in a small cemetery plot outside a children's home, Joshua Valiente stood over his wife's marker stone. Down almost as far as it was possible for him to be down. It was a bitterly cold March day. Helen Green Valiente Doak.
"What's it all about, honey?" he asked softly. "How did we come to this?"
He'd brought no flowers. He didn't need to. So well did the children tend the little plot, presumably under the kindly supervision of Sister John, the old friend of Joshua's, who now ran the place. It had been Sister John's idea to set up this marker, in fact, as a consolation for Joshua when he visited. Helen had insisted on being buried in the Datum, at a much less accessible site. The stone was marked with the date of Helen's death in 2067. 3 years on, Joshua supposed he was still trying to come to terms with the brutal reality. He was a man who had always sought to be alone, for big chunks of his life at least. Even his experiences on Step Day had come about because of that drive for solitude. It was now more than half a century since an irresponsible genius called Willis Lindsay had posted the specifications of a simple home workshop gadget called a stepper box online. And when you built it, strapped it on your belt, and turned the switch on the top, you found yourself stepping. A transition out of the old world, which everybody now called Datum Earth, and into another. A world silent and choked by forest, if you stepped over from a location like Madison, Wisconsin, as 13-year-old Joshua had. Turn the switch the other way, and you went back to where you started. Or if you were bold enough, as Joshua had been, you could take a step further away, on into one world after another. Suddenly, the long earth was open for business. A chain of parallel worlds, similar but not identical, and all save the original earth, Datum Earth, empty of humanity. For a loner kid like Joshua Valiente, a perfect refuge. But wherever you fled to, you had to come back in the end. Now, 67 years old, his wife dead, Sally Lindsay long lost, the two women polar opposites who had defined his life, with even his only son more or less estranged, Joshua had no choice but to be alone, it seemed. Joshua had a sudden, sharp headache, like a shock through the temples, and standing there, he thought he heard something, perhaps like the subsonic rumble of a deep quake. Sound waves so huge and energy dense, they were felt rather than heard. Joshua tried to focus on the here and now, this plot, his wife's name on the stone, the slab-like buildings of this low earth, all timber walls and solar panels. But the distant sound nagged. Something calling, echoing in the high megas. Join us. And much further from the Datum, in an empty, star-littered sky where an Earth should have been.
"It's impossible," said Stella Welch, staring at a tablet.
Dev Bilaniuk sighed.
"I know."
Stella was in her 60s, more than 30 years older than Dev. Not only that, Stella was next. So smart that when she really took off on some line of speculation or analysis, Dev, who with a doctorate from Valhalla U was no dummy himself, could barely see her dust on the horizon. Granted, she didn't look all that smart now from Dev's perspective, dangling upside down in the cavernous volume of this chamber deep within the brick moon, with her mass of zero-gravity grey hair stuck out at all angles. And she did seem to be as baffled by the invitation, the message the radio telescope called Cyclops had picked up, as Dev was.
"For one thing," she said, "we haven't even finished Cyclops yet."
"Sure, but the tests of the subarrays have proved successful so far.
and we were just switching around various sample targets when this SETI thing just showed up in the data feed and downloaded itself, and also, we've had reports that other scopes, mostly in the low Earths and the datum, have been picking this up too. That is, on other worlds, stepwise. This isn't just some beacon firing off radio messages in this particular sky. This is a long Earth-wide phenomenon. How the hell can that be?
Hesitantly, Dev said, There have been some odd reports on the Outernet, too. Funny stuff out in the long Earth. Nothing to do with radio astronomy. Strange stuff in the Troll's long call. She seemed to dismiss that.
And then there's the decryption.
She looked again at the tablet screen, the two blunt words in plain English. Join us.
There seems to be a lot of information buried under that basic pattern, Dev said now. Maybe we'll need the full Cyclops array to be up and running to extract all of that.
But the point is, she said heavily, that what we have received came with its own decryption algorithm encoded into it, like some kind of computer virus, an algorithm capable of translating its own meaning into English.
And other languages too, Dev said. Human languages, I mean. We tested that. We downloaded the thing into a tablet owned by a native Chinese speaker among the crew here.
Dev had got a corporate reprimand for that. But the tense relations between China and the Western nations down on the datum meant nothing here, 2 million worlds away.
How? Stella snapped now. How the hell can it speak to us? Presumably without any prior knowledge of humanity and our languages. We think this was sent by some civilization far off in the direction of Sagittarius, many light years away, maybe even somewhere close to the center of the galaxy. Our radio leakage can't have got that far, even from the datum.
Dev, bombarded, lost his patience.
Professor Welch, you are senior to me in the field by decades. You wrote the text I studied from. Also, you're a next. Why are you asking me?
She eyed him, and he saw a glint of humor under her irritated impatience.
Tell me what you think anyway. Any ideas?
He shrugged. I guess that, unlike you, I'm used to sharing a world with beings smarter than I am. These Sagittarians are smarter than that again. Smarter than you. They wanted to talk to us, and they knew how. The important thing, Professor, is to figure out what to do next.
She smiled.
We both know the answer to that.
He grinned back.
We're gonna need a bigger telescope.
Join us. And even further from Datum Earth. One day Joshua Valiente would call this elderly troll Sancho. But he already had a name of sorts in this troll band. Not a name any human could recognize or pronounce, more like a complex summary of his identity. A motif in the troll's endless song. And now, feeding with the others on rich bison meat, as the light of an early spring day slowly faded, Sancho was disturbed. He dropped his chunk of rib, stood up and scanned the horizon. The others grunted, briefly distracted, but they soon returned to their meal. Sancho, though, stood still, listening, watching. It had been a good day for these trolls, here at the heart of a different North America. For some days they had been tracking a herd of animals that were like bison, but not quite, with the troll's cooperative, communal eye on one particular elderly male who, limping heavily, had been trailing behind the migration. As the trolls had moved steadily towards the setting sun, invisibly paralleling the bison's motion in worlds a few steps away, their scouts had continually flicked across to watch the prey, stepping back to report their observations in dance and gesture and hooting cries. At last, the elderly bison had stumbled. For the bison himself, it was the end of a slow-burning, lifelong story. One hind leg had never properly healed from a splintering break he had suffered as a mere calf. Now that leg finally betrayed him. and the bison, downed, panting in the heat, was immediately surrounded by hunters, big, heavy humanoids, their hair black as night, stone blades and sharpened sticks in their massive hands. They closed in, cutting and slashing, aiming for tendons and hamstrings, seeking to sever veins, trying to stab to the heart. Trolls were sublimely intelligent in their way, but not as toolmakers. They did use shaped stones and sharpened sticks, but they had no way of striking at a prey from a distance. They had no bows, not even throwing spears. And so their hunting was direct and close up and gloriously physical. Big, muscular bodies thrown at the prey until it was worn down through the sheer application of strength. The bison was old and proud, and he bellowed as he tried to stand, to fight back. But he fell again under waves of assault from the hunters. It had been Sancho who had struck the final blow, smashing the bison's skull with a single blow from a massive rock. The trolls had gathered over the fallen beast and sung their victory song, of joy at the prospect of a meal, of respect for the bison's gift of life. Then they had fallen to the work of butchering the carcass, and the feasting began. The liver first, the kidneys, the heart. Soon the news of this kill would resonate in the trolls' long call, shared by bands across thousands of worlds, and it would lodge forever in the deep memories of certain older trolls like Sancho. But now, as this happy day was ending, Sancho was distracted from the kill, the feasting. He had heard something, or not heard. What was it? His mind was not like a human's, but it was roomy and full of dusty memory. He knew no human words, but if he had, he might have called what he heard or sensed the invitation. Sancho looked around at the pack, males and females and cubs feeding contentedly. He had spent years with this band, seen the little ones born, the old fail and die. He knew them as well as he knew himself. They were his whole world. Yet now he saw them for what they were, a handful of animals lost in an empty, echoing landscape, huddling, vulnerable in the dark. And from beyond the horizon, something was coming. Join us. And in a world only a few steps from the datum, in a new stone-built chapel in the footprint of an ancient English parish called St. John on the Water, Nelson Azikiwe was 78 years old and officially retired. Indeed, he had come back to this place because his old parish on the datum, although icebound on a world still suffering through a long volcano winter, was the place where, in his long and peripatetic life, he had felt most at home. Where else to retire? But to a man like Nelson, retirement was only a label. He continued to work to the limits of his strength on his various projects, as much as he ever had. It was just that now he was entitled to call it play, not work. Of course, it helped greatly that the growing technological infrastructure of this low Earth provided the communications he needed to keep in touch with the wider world, and indeed, worlds, without his needing to leave the comfort of his lounge. Thus, he spent time each day communicating with the Quizmasters, an online group of aging, grumpy, paranoid obsessives, none of whom, as far as he knew, he had ever met in person, who were now scattered over the low Earths and beyond, and yet across the decades had managed to remain in regular touch with each other, if necessary through the stepwise swapping of memory chips. It was an odd fact of the long Earth that, more than half a century after Step Day, still nobody had figured out how to send a message across the stepwise worlds save by carrying it by hand. Just now, the phenomenon that was becoming known as the invitation was snagging the Quizmaster's attention. The news of the receipt of an apparent SETI signal by a radio telescope at the Gap had been a nine-day wonder in the news media of the low Earths, insular and inward-looking and obsessed with local politics and celebrities as they were. There had been a flurry of reports, a firestorm of speculation over mankind's galactic future or its imminent cosmic doom, before it was all forgotten. But not by the Quizmasters. Some believed it must be what it most obviously looked like, some kind of SETI message from the sky, the fulfillment of the dreams of the decades-long search for extraterrestrial intelligence, a message whispering into radio telescopes on any stepwise world where they had been established. Others believed it couldn't be that precisely because that was the most obvious explanation. Maybe this was a covert military experiment, or some kind of corporate viral infiltration, or the first moves of the long-anticipated Chinese invasion of a prostrate post-Yellowstone America. And it was as Nelson was sifting through another day's communications on this burning topic that he received an invitation of his own. The screens of all his tablets and other devices suddenly blanked. Nelson sat back in his chair, startled, suspecting a power outage. Not uncommon in a world that relied on the careful burning of wood for its electricity supplies. But then one screen after another lit up with a familiar face. A man's face, calm, head shaven. Nelson felt a tingle of anticipation.
"Hello, Lobsang. I thought you'd gone away again."
The face smiled back, and the multiple devices in Nelson's room resounded to a voice like the beating of a gong in a Buddhist temple.
"Good afternoon, Nelson. Yes, I have gone away. Think of this presence merely as a kind of messaging service."
Nelson wondered how much of Lobsang he was talking to, since Lobsang, when fully functioning, had seemed to run much of Datum Earth. For him, vocal speech must have been about as efficient a method of communication as yodeling in Morse. Probably this avatar wasn't much more than a sophisticated speech generator. And yet, Nelson reflected, he had taken the trouble to have this messaging service smile at his old friend. Lobsang said now,
"I have some news for you."
The tablet before Nelson cleared again, and Lobsang's face was replaced by that of a child, a sun-kissed boy aged maybe 10 or 11.
"This is somebody I only just discovered myself. A remote probe called in, rather belatedly."
"Who is he?"
"Nelson, he's your grandson." "Join us."
And much further from the datum, indeed more than 200 million steps out. The USS Charles M. Duke wasn't Admiral Maggie Kaufman's boat. At 68, she was much too old for operational command and was in fact formally retired. Not that that kept her from troubling her former superiors and nominal successors in the echelons of what remained of the US Navy. Yet this latest mission into the deep long earth was her idea, her inspiration. Hell, the result of a 25-year-long campaign on her part to resolve an item of unfinished business. And, she realized, when Captain Jane Sheridan told her about the note that had been received from Datum, Hawaii, it was a bit of business that was going to have to be left unfinished a while longer yet. Maggie did put up a fight, though.
"But we've come so close. 200 million worlds plus change."
"With another 50,000 to go yet, Admiral, and the most hazardous stretch."
"Bah, I could pilot this tub through that hazardous stretch in my sleep."
"I'm afraid the recall is quite unambiguous, ma'am. We have to turn back. They don't send out fast pursuit boats to deliver such a command every day. And after all, the note is for you. Admiral Cutler is calling for your return specifically."
"Why, Ed Cutler couldn't command a leaky bathtub."
"I couldn't comment on that, ma'am."
"I'm retired."
"Of course you are, Admiral."
"I don't have to take any damn orders from that old desk jockey."
"But I do, ma'am," said Sheridan softly.
Maggie sighed and looked out through the sturdy windows of this observation deck at the churning volcanic landscape of the latest stepwise Earth and at the pursuit boat, a sleek craft that hung in the sky alongside the Duke.
"But we came so far," she said plaintively. "And it's been so long."
25 years since she'd left a science party on West 247,830,855. a very strange Earth, an Earth that was a mere moon of a greater planet, more than 20 years since a relief mission found they'd vanished.
They're my people, Jane.
I know, ma'am.
Sheridan was in her late 20s, but highly capable, had the air of someone significantly older.
But the way I see it is this. After 25 years, they're either dead, or they found a way to survive. Either way, they'll keep a little longer.
Damn it. Not only are you ridiculously young, you're also ridiculously right. Damn, Cutler. What's all this about? Some kind of invitation?
I don't know any more than you right now, Admiral.
Even as they argued, the Duke began its long trip home, and the subtle swing-like sense of regular stepping resumed. Beyond the windows, whole worlds flapped by, one a second, then two, then four. Sun and rain, heat and cold, landscapes and suites of life and climate systems, there and gone in the blink of an eye. But nobody was watching this routine miracle.
Join us.
And elsewhere. On this chill March day, the shaven-headed novice, sitting cross-legged behind a low desk and labouring over texts that had originated in the 8th century after Christ, was distracted by a distant noise, a faint call. Not the talk and laughter of the villagers in the clean Himalayan air, the old men with their smoky pipes, the women with their laundry, the little children playing with their homemade wooden toys. Not the clank of cowbells from the passes. It had been like a voice, the boy thought, echoing from the cold, white, ice-draped face of the mountain that loomed over this valley, deep in old Tibet. A voice that chimed inside his own head. Words, softly spoken. Humanity must progress. This is the logic of our finite cosmos. Ultimately, we must rise up to meet its challenges if we are not to expire with it. Consider, we call ourselves the wise ones, but what would a true Homo sapiens be like? What would it do? Surely it would first of all treasure its world, or worlds. It would look to the skies for other sapient life forms, and it would look to the universe as a whole. The boy called,
Joshua?
The master slammed the palm of his hand flat on the desk, making the boy jump.
Pay attention, Lobsang.
Join us. Join us.
The words rained down from the sky across the long earth, wherever there were ears to hear, and eyes to see, and minds to understand. Standing by his wife's grave marker, Joshua Valiente didn't want any invitation.
Leave me alone, damn it!
He stepped away angrily. The air he displaced created a soft breeze that touched the petals of the flowers on the grave. Yet the voice from the sky did not cease.
Join us! Join us! Join us!